an A&E original podcast.
I love shrimp. I don't like sushi, but I like oysters and all that type of stuff. But like crawfish, like the act of breaking and pulling something out
and sucking the head.
Yeah, that's just weird.
And crawfish look like cockroaches.
They do. They don't look like little lobsters.
No. You want me to suck a cockroach head? Hey y'all, welcome to The Table Is Ours, the show where we chat everything Black. That's identity, progression, and truth. Today I have my favorite co-host, Kirby Dixon.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yes, that's, girl.
I don't know why I said that. That's what I wanted to do today.
If Kirby were a summer look, she would be a crop top with some high-waisted shorts because she's a hottie with a body ready to take the streets, ready to take these New York streets.
Here we go, here we go. And y'all know who that is. That is my girl, Amira Lawali. If Amira were a summer look, she would be a one-piece romper shorty, looking fine as summer wine.
I love a romper jumpsuit.
With only one article of clothing.
I do. I love her summer jumpsuit. It's me. It's who I am.
They're so cute. Rompers are so cute.
I love them.
You know, we have to ask this to each other every week, but how are you? How are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. Well, yeah. I'm okay. But it's going to be good because I feel the week is ending. But this week has been a little stressful, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, what's been so stressful about it?
Well, I don't have a home. So I bounce between Maryland with my boyfriend and Houston with my mom a lot. And so I went to Houston. So traveling's always a lot. And then catching up with work while you're traveling is a lot. So That's what happened. But how are you?
I hear that. I'm good, but I kind of had that feeling this week, too. Like, I went to celebrate my friend's birthday in Maryland this weekend. Yeah. And that's the first time I've been around people, really, and my friends in a really long time, almost a year. So I've seen people here and there, but being around a group of people, that was a lot for me. But I feel you in kind of being a little bit unsettled, because even though I'm home in Philly, this hasn't been my home for the past 8 years. So,
yeah.
But none of my stuff is here. Everything's still in storage. I wear the same clothes because I'm trying not to shop too much on the internet, knowing that I have a whole storage unit filled of clothes and things that are mine. So I felt that a little bit this week,
too. I'm so proud of you because I have whenever I'm missing clothes and I'm in the opposite location, I just buy more. That's why I'm broke right now. So I am proud of you. Every time I get a package, my boyfriend's like, again, Amira? I'm like, yes.
You know what's so crazy about me? I love fashion. I love clothes. I love things that are a little bit like I think people would think bizarre. Like I love that kind of high fashion, weird stuff.
Yeah.
But I also am like one of the few people in the entire world that likes to try on clothes. So I'm not an online shopper, which probably has worked to my advantage during this time. If I could go to the store and go to the mall and just be comfortable with trying stuff on, girl, I probably would have been picking up things here and there too. But because a lot of the dressing rooms are closed and things like that, I just look at it and I walk on by. I'm not an online shopper unless it's an Ivy Park drop.
And I love online shopping. Not having to be around people.
Yes.
Getting tons of options, sending them back when they don't fit right. It's a thrill.
But you see those horror stories, right? Where like people buy these like prom dresses and things like that from like abroad. And you think what you thought you were going to get versus what you get is so different. I'm traumatized for them. It's like that secondhand embarrassment. So I don't do it anymore because I hate going to UPS. I hate going to FedEx. I don't want to put stuff back if it doesn't fit. And next thing you know, I get a store credit from a shop that I'm never going to purchase from anymore.
Yeah.
Because I took too long to take it back. But you know who was serving a look on this podcast this week? The iconic, the incredible.
Tell them.
The award-winning Miss Uzo Aduba.
Yes. Not even just a look. She literally popped up and I said, wow, I look dusty. Like, I was like, wow, I should have done my edges.
Listen, we had to go back to the drawing board.
I was like, I should have redone this. She looks so good.
Over here looking like Mickey Mouse.
I know.
And here she comes, literally Mrs. America, glowing on our Zoom screens.
Yeah. I literally went.
Okay, I'm sure y'all know this multi Emmy award winning queen, but if you don't, she portrays Suzanne, aka Crazy Eyes from Orange is the New Black, the iconic, historic Miss Shirley Chisholm in Mrs. America, and she has two new projects coming out later this month, including Solos, out May 21st on Amazon, and In Treatment, which is her first leading role in a TV series, out May 23rd on HBO.
We love a busy queen, but we instantly connected because we are both first generation and children of real life dreamers. We chatted about the media's portrayal of Black women and mental health crisis and discussed working through grief because it's hard. Uzo Aduba, let's get it.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Well, we are so excited to have you here. Welcome to The Table is Ours. We have been waiting for this moment for so long. You have no idea. You know, we start this podcast asking everybody the same question. It is a question that both Amir and I feel like does not get asked enough. Ooh. So first and foremost, girl, how are you? Like, how are you really?
Today, I'm doing great. I'm a little tired. I'm not gonna lie. I'm not gonna lie. Cause I've also decided now, like, it's like fine to say, like, oh, today's shit. Or can I swear on this, by the way?
Oh, yes. It is not only allowed, it is encouraged.
If you want to drink, go ahead.
Got it. To say that, but also like not trying to burden myself with the task of like answering like for my whole life. Like no one's asking for the summation of my entire existence. It's like, how are you today? So today I'm okay. I'm actually doing good today. I am a little bit tired though. We've been running around, my team and I, doing a lot of talking and meeting new people because my show In Treatment is coming out.
You have a lot of good stuff coming out.
Yeah, yes. Very busy.
Yeah. Yes. Excited. So today's the last day. So I'm like, great, because y'all are the last people that I'm talking to today.
Ooh, but good.
Saving the best for last.
Yes.
And then gonna get a little break for the weekend coming up, which is great.
Wow. Oh, so we are the finish line, and we'll make sure you have a great time.
Yes, indeed. I know I will. How are you all? How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm gonna be honest. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. It's been a day, but honestly, this is the bright spot. So in this moment, I'm great. Like in this hour, it's turned around.
Good.
And I am totally there with Amira. This week has been a lot. I am exhausted.
Yes.
So when you said tired, I was like, yes. Like I sighed myself. Like, yes, I'm tired. But right now I am great. I am on cloud nine.
Yes. The club I'm excited for is like that 8 o'clock pillow. Oh, that's where I'm like,
Can I get into that club too?
I'm going to. I know someone if you want.
Thank you. I will bring a silk pillow just in case.
Oh, okay. I have the extra if you want. No, I guess.
We will take you up on that.
I have extra. I'm like excited. I'm like, what did you do? I'm like, I slept. It was amazing.
Well deserved.
It was amazing. Yes.
But to jump right in, Kirby and I were so excited to speak with you for a few reasons. One, like I feel like very often in this podcast, we talk about like, me and Kirby are very proud of where we come from. Mm-hmm. Like, we talk about our moms all the time. Mm-hmm. We talk about our relationships with them. And I think, well, even before our research, I knew that you were first gen too. I'm first gen as well.
Yes.
First gen, tell me the family.
Sierra Leone.
That's what I thought. Yep. Okay.
And Uzo, your family's from Nigeria, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I was reflecting on like what it means to be first gen. It made me laugh because we're having our moms on the podcast soon. And I was trying to tell our producers, like, she's going to come and be like, this is going on the internet? You put this on the internet, Amira?
Yes.
I know, but I did want to ask you, what was it like growing up first gen? Were there any culture classes that you had with your parents or other families because it was so different?
Culture classes, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, immediately out the gate, the first culture clash is like hanging out. Like, it's like the idea of like hanging out, like when parents aren't home, absolutely, or going somewhere where a parent isn't, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, definitely not done. I don't even know if in high school we were allowed to have friends over without like our parents being, I'm not confident that that was allowed. Like, I'm thinking it back. I know for sure when I was little, like my parents weren't home, they were at work, if they were wherever, like mm-hmm. no one was allowed in the house. Does not matter if
ever.
It's Matt Brown from across the street or like, yep. you know what I mean? Who they know, it does not matter. Like, not allowed. Or are you to go while they're not home? I think also language, like the, what do you call it? Like, is it a homonym sound alike, but aren't spelt
the same meaning? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or same homonym has same meaning. So I can't remember. A homophone. It was like a homophone type word, like Snickers and sneakers, you know, like my mom would be like, go and get me a sneaker from the fridge, and be like,
yes,
Snickers, you mean? And she'd be like, sneakers. She would like over enunciate the word, like making fun back at us. What else? Like, well, I mean, this wasn't actually my parents. I think the biggest one I would probably say was going to college. I went to school for voice performance. Mm-hmm. My parents were actually, where this isn't a culture clash from my parents, but this is definitely a culture clash from my like extended family. My parents were actually really super supportive of me going into the arts. They right. really did like.
Oh, that's amazing. Encourage- That yeah. doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, my mom was like, so you're going to study what else in TV? Like, what else?
The medical version of TV?
Yes, like a doctor on TV, consultant.
Yeah, exactly.
They were supportive. They were supportive. I mean, even down to, I don't know if this is true for you, Amira, or not, but like, we also, like, my siblings and I, my parents were very progressive in this front. Like, we were playing sports. We were like in the drama club. Like, that was also like not super common with like a lot of my family friends who were yeah. also Nigerian. Like, it's like we go to school and we come home and study. And yeah. my parents were like, you go to school, you study, and then you can do those activities. And those activities uh-huh. will definitely go away yeah. if the grades aren't met. But like
100%.
I was at my graduation party and I remember my uncle sat me down. And he asked me what it was I was getting ready to do. And I told him I was going to school for voice performance, which is music, singing. And then he just like looked at me for a beat and was like, singing, I mean, like ordinary singing. And I was like, I guess. yes. Ordinary singing. I will yep. never like singing, ordinary singing. Like, I was like, yes, like, yeah, but they were fine. Just funny.
My mom would put us in all of these things. So she was like, this is how you get into American college. So you just got to do everything.
She knew!
I was in Girl Scouts for way too long. I'll just leave it at that.
Wait, how long were you in Girl Scouts for?
Graduation. Yeah, when did I graduate? When I got my diploma, she was like, no, you have to stay in. You need a scholarship.
In college, you were a Girl Scout?
No, high school. Oh. Oh, that's embarrassing.
I was going to say, so Amira, can I still order Girl Scout cookies from you right now?
I mean, I have some. I have some.
I have a hookup.
Can I get some Thin Mints?
Thin Mint. Oh, Thin Mints.
Well, it's so funny because I am not the daughter of first generation dreamers, but I relate to you guys in so much, especially you, Uzo, because another thing that Amir and I discuss a lot is we have what people would call like bizarre names, different names, but we're very proud of our names, right?
Very yes. protective.
So my name is Kirby and I'm always mistaken for a guy.
Really?
Which has actually, I've learned to use it to my benefit.
Really?
Yes.
People think Kirby is a boy?
Mr. Dixon, Mr. Kirby, hello, sir, all of the time. And Amira's name is so beautiful and so different to the fact that people don't even know what her real name is.
I'm going to need to know two things. First of all, A, Kirby, why did your parents name you Kirby?
Well, you know what's funny?
You wanna say,
No. Like, my mom loves surnames for girls. So anything that can be considered one or the other. So like Jordan or you can't really tell.
That's one of my favorites. Yeah.
Yeah. So my great aunt, rest in peace, used to work in a school and she had a little girl in her class whose name was Kirby. She adored her. And my mom had said, Kirby. Oh my God, I love that name. Decided to name me after her. So
wow.
Yeah, no crazy story.
Thank you, student Kirby.
Yeah, I know, right? So shout out to Kirby wherever you are.
Exactly.
And, you know, we didn't need to do research on you, but we did on some of your background. And you have a beautiful name as well. But we know you didn't always embrace your name. So wondering, when did you start embracing your full self, including your name?
I mean, the fullness of my name, I think it's funny because it's like when I was a kid, definitely like my mom, you know, my mom wasn't my first rodeo. I'm third of five, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So she'd already been down the road of like kids approaching her with like new machinations of, yes, like their names, you know what I'm saying? So like, here I come thinking I'm all smart and slick. And she's like, I've been here, done that. Like and probably why her answer came so quick and was like, no, this is what we're going to call you instead. You're not going to call yourself that. They can learn to say Uzamaka. They can learn to say Tchaikovsky and Dostoevsky and Michelangelo. They can learn to say Uzamaka.
Yes.
Like, and just like, keep it moving, you know, Zoe Watts, you know, like, Watts, you know, like that kind of thing, and keep it pushing. I think that, I don't know. I can't think of like a specific moment when suddenly my name was embraced. I think it was like, well, I tried that one, so it's like not happening. Like I'm stuck with it, right? But I do know there was like this weird evolution of being in primary school when that name was being constantly mispronounced to then being in middle school, where now you don't just have the one teacher, but you know, I don't know if this is true for you guys in your middle school, but like then you're rotating classes. Mm-hmm. So you have like every, on the first day of school, you know, it's like homeroom teacher and then like X, Y, and Z teacher thereafter throughout the course of the day.
Yeah.
And it kind of went from like the heart palpitations of like, are they going to screw up my name? And is this going to become a big thing and big deal and whatever, to like sitting there, like not helping at all.
Oh, I love that energy.
Yes. Cause I was second on my class homeroom list. One student right before me, Dan Abramson, was first, and then me, Aduba, mm-hmm, AD. And it would be like, you would see each teacher as you go around and they'd be like, you can watch them like with the class list, you know, and they're like,
yeah.
I know.
And I, they're looking that at you and you're just sitting there like,
oh my god.
It became
gosh,
like a funny game to then like, I'm not give it your best. I'm here for it too. What was it going to sound like?
Yeah.
But then like to where I am now, I would say like to arriving at a place where it's like not wanting to race by how to say it and whatever version you come up with is fine enough for me, to someone attempting it and hoping for me to give them the permission to say it however suits them, to me stopping and saying, we'll do this correction, we'll get it. You know, I understand there's placement and things like that. It might not be pitch perfect because it is tonal, but we are going to stand here and try, just as I had to learn how,
right,
to spell, mm-hmm, Dostoevsky, D-V-O-T.
Yes.
A smattering of consonants against like a single vowel. We will also stand here and give that time, as much time and space as well. And I think that's where I live now. You know what I mean? I don't know about y'all.
Yeah, it is not that hard. I remember having my best friend in elementary school, her last name was Wojciechowicz.
Mm-hmm.
And it is spelled so specially that I just remember being a kid, second or third grade, like, oh my God, it was like almost like a prize. I would almost say happily, I can spell her last name. I don't know how to pronounce it. It was like a game.
Yes.
I loved it. Uzo is not hard. And your full name is not hard either. So if you take the time to just hear what's being said.
Yeah. It's like, I just want people to disrespect it.
Exactly.
Like, I respect your name. Give me the same respect I give you. When we were back in the office, there was like a new girl who was on our floor. And she kept calling me Amira. And our floor was full of people who clearly knew my name. And I had to, for literally 2 months, I had to correct her. But I think it bugged me because, like, no one on her team or around her corrected her as well. I was like, girl, you've known me for 3 years. You know how I feel about my name. You should tell your friend.
And you know my name.
You know my name.
And it's not hard.
Yeah. And you know what she's doing, Amira? Makes me uncomfortable. I was like, well, my name's Amira and I won't answer you if you call me Myra again. But then she got it right. So, hey, girl.
You should have totally just been like, okay, Brittany.
Exactly.
Pronouncing her name incorrectly.
Exactly. Ashley.
Ashley.
Exactly. Ashley Y. Like, whatever. Like, you know, like. So wait, so is Amir your full name?
Amir is my middle name. My first name is Aziza. Aziza Amir Luwale.
Ooh. Ooh, this podcast is going to blow up after you said that.
What is Aziza?
Aziza means powerful. Amir means princess. My mom, like, she didn't know what she was doing. She was like, here she comes. But then what happened was, Aziza is my first name. I went for it the first few years. But then they told me as a child, like, 8-year-old me, Amir meant princess. And I was like, oh, this is how I can con people into calling me royalty.
You're like, and all you needed to say.
I was like, I can make my sisters call me a princess every day. This is what we're going to move forward with.
And so it shall be.
The vanity.
That's literally what's happened since then, the 20 vanity. Years ago.
Wow. Does anybody call you Aziza?
People call me Aziza when I'm in trouble. Like, when they're like, oh, Aziza. And I'm like, oh, really? Don't say my government name. I'm in trouble.
Really? Does your mom, is your mom?
My mom calls me Amira. They all call me Amira.
Wait, so she named you Aziza, but she always called you Amira, or you changed it to Amira?
My mom wanted my first name to be Amira from, like, birth. My dad wanted it Aziza out of respect for an aunt. So she always wanted to call me Amira. So she was like, okay, we win. We both win. Yeah.
Fine with me. That's amazing.
Uzo, we do want to pivot to talk about your start in the industry, and we are Black women in media, so we're so fascinated with this part of the world, especially on your side of things. And we know that as Black women, it is not easy to get into this industry.
At all.
And especially, you know, someone like you and like Amira, who is coming from a family that may not necessarily understand this world, it's even more complicated to try and get assistance and help. But I'm wondering, as you were navigating the space, you know, going into voiceover work and things like that, was there ever a time that you said, you know what, this is too much. I can't get my foot in the industry. I want to quit.
Yes.
What did that look like?
It looked like September 14th, 2013, on a Friday where I, right before I got Orange, you know, so the first job I had on television was Orange is the New Black.
Yes. Please shout it out again. I got you. Oh, so we had Danielle Brooks on the podcast as well.
When was Danielle on? When was she on?
About a month ago.
Yeah, about a month ago.
Right for Mahalia.
Oh, yeah. Isn't she the best? I know y'all had a good Kiki.
Oh, we had a good Kiki.
Yeah, we did have a good time.
I know, she's hilarious.
She's funny.
Yeah, then I had like I had, you know, throughout the years had questioned work and things like this, and had challenges and struggles and, you know, hardship, but that was the first time I ever quit right before I got Orange. I mean like quit in my heart, quit. Like I was like, I meant what I said. Exactly.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I quit, but it's like, but I'm going to still go to that audition tomorrow. It was like, no, I quit. And then that evening, 5:43 PM, I will never forget. I will never for the rest of my life. I will never forget it. Because when I quit, I ordered sushi and some wine to have a, like, I'm going to law school party. Like, you know, and invited my sister over. And then I wound up getting home and getting the call at 5:43 PM that I had got booked Orange is the New Black.
Wow.
And it just turned my whole life around. And I had quit because it's like, that summer I had been trying for film and television for the first, like really trying for the first time ever in my career. I'd never really gone out for it before. Mm-hmm. I knew that I wanted to, but I think I was really scared to speak it aloud and into existence as my truth, because I just did not see anybody like me, who looked like me, or enough people with proximity to me doing it.
Right.
And I mean, I love the title of your show because it's like, it's just that language similar to, you know, what former Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm, like in talking about a seat at a table, you know, there was just, it's like everybody wants to go to a party when you're invited, right? Nobody wants to be the one that's like, they're crashing the party, you know? And I just couldn't see a seat for me that was set at the table, you know? And so it just seemed like something like that would just never happen. It just felt like something that was never going to happen.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see the invitation to it, into it. And then when that call came and, you know, all the amazing, wonderful things that transpired after within our show and the cast and all of this, it was like, I don't think I realized fully to the degree I had felt invisible until I felt seen.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah.
I can relate to that so much.
How, Kirby? Tell me.
You know, Amira and we talk about it a lot on this podcast, and the great thing is that people are finally listening, even at our company, and we're in corporate America, and it's traditionally a very white space. And even if you have people that look like you and I, we tend to be at the bottom. When you look at that executive level, you don't see anyone that looks like you. And I think in these past couple of years, Amira and I have found the importance and the meaning that you can't be what you can't see. And we confided in each other, and we found ourselves in each other. So that's really what sparked our desire to create this show, is that we wanted to make sure that other young people, other young Black women specifically in this industry and coming up in this industry, would have something to look towards and know that it was possible. And we wanted to pull from our faves, our Black faves like you, to hear about your journey so that as we're starting to forge our own path, we can kind of take the lessons that you guys have already learned and start to put it into practice ourselves. So, you know, knowing that you've been in a room and you don't see anyone that looks like you, you just want to give up. You tried to, you know, voice ideas or concepts or pitch stories, and the people on the receiving end just don't understand it, so they say no. That's what we've been navigating. And I think we're finally at a space, because of people like you, where we can so confidently stand in our truth. And the table is ours, so I don't care. I don't care if your table's not set up. Ours is, and we want you guys to bring seats.
Yeah.
I feel like very weirdly emotional right now. We're talking about feeling, I'm trying like not to tear, but I felt like there are times in my career where I felt so invisible.
It's the Capricorn Queen in you.
It's the Capricorn Queen in me, but like.
Here she goes.
Capricorn Queen, she said. I love it.
Here she goes.
I love it.
No, I felt like, I just remember thinking like, I feel, they can't see me. Like, I don't know how to explain it to people who don't get it, but like, I know you can't see me. And it either makes you uncomfortable I'm here, or you just don't understand what to do with me. So the fact that you almost gave up and you're like key representation for us and like who we see, like, that makes me so sad that you were to the point of giving up. Cause like, I this is very selfish, but like, I needed you, like I needed to see you. So the fact that you're so close makes me very sad, but I'm happy that you're here and I'm happy that we're here.
You know what, Amira?
Yeah.
Uzo, the road is good.
The road is good.
That is literally what I see. What did those audition rooms look like for you though? Were they just as discouraging? You know, were you walking into auditions and be like, dang, no one else here looks like me. Am I like trying out for the right role?
No, or you see, it's like one of two things. It's like either you're feeling like you're going, and I felt like I was going out a lot, by the way, that when I started audition, that time when I started going out for film and television, I felt like I was going out a lot and still felt like I was going out a fraction of the amount of time as my non-women of color peers, Black female specifically peers. And then what those a lot felt like a combination of things. It felt like either what my role on the project was in service to do was nothing that centralized myself or the character's experience or any experience I was familiar with. It felt like I was there as, I call it like theater roles. Like my job, it's like, and this is a horrible analogy because you ran track and I actually believe every leg to be important, but it's like, it's like third leg on the relay. Where
that was
like,
my position.
Oh God.
I was moving too. I was trying to get the baton to the next one. Yeah.
You're moving, but the people we remember when you think of when they're talking about like relay is like first and anchor.
First and
like
last. Yep.
First, you know what I mean? Like set the race and finish it. And it felt like my job is just to help facilitate those two parts to get them to the finish line. As though that, like my role is not crucial enough to be recognized. Your role, Kirby, on the track. Right? Like, it's like, when it is, it's like, that baton's not getting from two to four without three. So you know what I mean? Like, why not give her flowers, right? And that's kind of like, I was like, I'm not interested in being the one who's like, the body was close to the door, but the keys were still in the lock. So it doesn't look like it was a forced entry. So she knew her. I would bet it was somebody have you asked the boyfriend? You know what I mean? Where it's like, yeah. And now we keep going with the thing. I wasn't interested in that. It's like, how can we never know anything about that person? You know what I mean? Who clearly is the one we're all going to for.
Knows everything.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, clearly knows a lot more than what we're giving her to do. So I was seeing a lot of that. I think the real piece, I don't know if this is true for you. I think it's probably true for you, but tell me if I'm wrong. Like, knowing that how, like, I'm seen is limited as an artist, like how you are literally seeing me puts boundaries around what then was believed I was capable of.
Yes.
And always wanting to make art that was expansive and exploratory and so much more than the limited view they could see of, and also limited view of how they perceived, more important, what they saw of my skin color, my dark skin, my full lips, my broad nose, my almond-shaped eyes, my body type, my gap, my voice, my carriage suggests is such a narrow idea and like single line phrase of who I am, if that's what's defining all of me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If that's meant to define all of me, and now also simultaneously shape the art that I am allowed to make. And that did not, art is supposed to be freeing and releasing and opening. And now I suddenly felt very boxed into something.
Very small. That I, yeah.
Very small. And a person I didn't even know, have never met when I would, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know if you guys ever had that in your workspace, and that's what made you, you know, build the table.
Oh, that's exactly what made it. That's exactly yeah. what happened. Because I was like, who is that girl? Like, yeah. I was like, I yeah. know her. I've never known her before. This is awkward. I don't want to continue getting to know her.
Yeah, totally.
I don't feel good.
Totally.
But that kind of brings us to, we wanted to touch on your roles a little bit, because Kirby and I were chatting and we feel like you are so intentional with the roles that you take, from Crazy Eyes to Shirley. I loved Mrs. America.
Yes. Also, that that entire Orange cast, like, y'all are doing the damn thing. Yeah. Like, in every role, all of you guys, I feel like, are so intentional, and we're lucky to, thank you for blessing us with that.
Thank you. I'll receive it for us.
Oh. How do you choose your roles? Like, what does it take for you to take a second glance at a role and say, oh, this is something that I could portray or should portray?
Well, first I would say is story. Because when Orange, like, this wasn't, like, it wasn't like I was like, I was turning down pops left and right before Orange. Yeah. That was not the case. Mm-hmm. That was not, like, it was the first one that called. But I can say that Orange was one of two scripts that I read that summer that were excellent, not good, not great, excellent. I distinctly remember thinking, reading that pilot script and being like, that was excellent. I would love to be a part of something like that. And it stood supreme against everything else I had auditioned for. And I think having had that experience, coupled with the experience of making Orange, just sort of like made me zone, like super zone into something that had been true for me in theater, which is like, I just want to be a part of good stories and be a part of things that excite me creatively, make me feel inspired, or like I have something to say. So that just was something I carried over into film and television now, is like, do I like the story? Did I like the script itself? Like, is there something in it that I like? Okay, yes. And then the part itself is like, do I feel inspired or charged, or like I have something to say? That's been the other part for me. And if I don't feel like I have something to say, or if the script itself isn't like shining on light on something that's been missing, or the part isn't, then I'm kind of like, I don't need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you guys go about like doing your gig, or like who you even want to talk to. Like, does that play into, you know what I mean? Like, how do you determine like how you want the conversations, who you want to be in conversation with?
I think we've been very lucky with the guests who have graced mm-hmm. our pod, which also thank you. Thank you for coming.
Yes.
Thank you for having me. I'm loving this, PS.
Okay. We think it's really important to have the conversations where not only A&E the company wants, but we as Black women want.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So specifically, Danielle, for example, was so open in public about her pregnancy. And mm-hmm. Herbie and I have been very open with each other about how, like, terrified we are of it because the stats we see about it. Mm-hmm. And then, so we were like, oh, we can have a Black woman to Black woman conversation about, like, how we feel.
Yes.
So it's just, we're lucky that this podcast is a safe space that we're able to push what boundaries and what themes that we really want to talk about. And it could be in a theme that maybe not have to do with a guest, but they, like, have touched on it briefly. And we're like, how do you really feel about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think what I love about this is that there's such a relatability to all of us. I don't think that we'll ever find a guest that we can't relate to them in some way, especially because we're centering Black voices. So Black women and Black men, Black people, period. So there's just like a natural understanding and kind of common experience that we've all gone through at some point.
Got it.
So it's almost like we're giving a little bit of an inside look into what it's like to be Black people existing period, just living our lives, like the things that we have to deal with day in and day out.
And the range, I feel like, that you have on the show of experiences too, you know, guests that are not just like a singular monolith, you know what I mean? Like, which is like, but yet, like you said, to your point, Kirby, like there is universality in that, you know what I mean? And relatability in that, regardless of like the background, education, career path, you know, age, whatever, all of it, that like we all can find some kinship.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We're going to get to your incredible character and in Treatment, but we all know that Shirley Chisholm was a force. We're still living by the words and the things that she's laid out for us to this day.
Yes.
But Crazy Eyes in particular, you brought such a softness and a beauty to Black women going through mental health issues. I think Crazy Eyes is actually probably my favorite character. One, because, girl, you killed that role.
So like, good.
Remember, I think that's one of the first shows that I watched, and I'm just like, wow, that actress is really good.
I would literally like, is this real? There are two people, like J-Lo and Selena, and you and Crazy Eyes, where I'm like, oh, those are just characters.
Yes!
Those are just real people in real life.
Wait, J-Lo and Selena?
I thought J-Lo did that role, Selena.
My mind went to Selena Gomez for some reason. Oh my God. I am not even funny. The first time I thought you said Shakira, and then I was like, what? And then I was like, she said Selena. And
oh my gosh.
Yes. What, didn't she? Yes. Continue. Now I'm with you. And yes, I love her in that movie. Continue. Yeah.
But for a while, I thought, I was just like, she's crazy, guys. This is who she is. This is a real person. I know that's my homegirl. That's my friend. No.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's the show too. I mean, like, I loved that show. And like, you know, every year of it had like a variety of experiences and evolutions as we were like growing in our characters, being on a, you know, show for longer and experience within entertainment. But, you know, those early years in particular where all of us were so new, it was and still is the most inclusive cast I've ever worked with before. Mm-hmm. Every single actor, you know, Kirby, what you're talking about, like everybody going off to do other things since, like, I think that's just, I'm proud to know that that is reflective of the talent that like I got to witness and experience.
Yeah, pat yourself on the back.
Not me. I don't even mean me. I don't mean me. I mean like that cat, like it's like you could watch and be like, everybody here is excellent. Like everyone is excellent. Every single person is excellent. And just like, of course, you know, Selena Sleva is now on Diary of a Future President. Like, of course Danielle is doing Mahalia. Of course Samira went on to go and do Handmaids. Of course Natasha went on to create Russian Doll. You know what I mean? Of course, because everybody had a wealth of talent was beyond. It was a well that was never going to run dry. The amount of talent that existed on that show. Of course, Adrian's doing a buddy cop show. You know what I mean? Like, of course, it's just like that was, they were killing it, you know, and space opened up, thankfully, and may it continue, you know, in a time where like those talents had always existed. You know what I mean? That had always been there in them. And also, by the way, in the women and men who had come before them.
Yeah.
You know, but like the season for them to be seen and to excite existed.
What were those conversations like with the producers when you're portraying a Black woman who's experiencing her own mental health issues, like knowing that there's such a stigma in the Black community around
particularly
mental health, especially in Black women dealing with their own mental health issues? Like, were you ever nervous about that when you were portraying Crazy Ass, or did you have conversations with the team behind the scenes to make sure you were giving an authentic portrayal and not just creating a caricature of what mental health looked like?
Right. We never had a conversation per se. I don't remember any discussion ever being had. I do know that I would get DMs and posts or like fan mail, you know, of people writing in who were like, this is my daughter, you are my mother, you are me.
Yeah.
And knowing that I had seen like mental health discussions happen on film and on TV, but had never seen, like in the same way within treatment, like I just never seen someone of my ilk telling it. And so I don't think I felt scared as much as I just did feel a responsibility to try not to make it something that, I don't know, just felt like totally ridiculous or impossible to be an experience for us.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that was more the thing. I just felt like I felt responsible. I felt responsible for Suzanne. And I think maybe now because I have more distance from like doing the gig, mm-hmm. like a responsibility to us as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Speaking of in treatment, that trailer looks amazing.
We've gotten sneak peeks of episodes.
We did.
Oh, you have?
I didn't want to tell, but we got the hookup, guys.
She's like, we got it.
We got it. And we watched it.
Oh, cool.
So watching it made me reflect on the first time I actually went to therapy. And I went to therapy, me, my sisters, and my mom, we lost my dad when I was like 11, really young. So my mom, thank you. But my mom, she was, for someone who's first generation, she was actually very open to therapy, which I completely applaud for her for. Mm-hmm. My question for you, was therapy part of your life growing up, or was it something that you came about? Like, is this just the scene, or was this something that you've had a connection to for a while?
I did not go to therapy when I was young, but I actually don't think it would have been ruled out by my family. My mom was a social worker.
Oh, that's great. That's good.
So like she also, I think, had like an openness to it. Do you know what I mean? Like sort of in the world of health, mental health, all of this. So I don't think so. But I did go to therapy in my adulthood, my adult self. And she knew and never said anything like in opposition of that. I will have to say, like, in certain ways, like areas like that, like as much culture clash as I did experience, like on a Friday night where like everybody's having pizza and we're having like jollof rice, like I would have, like, I did also see what, like, I think, I don't know if y'all call it the same thing, Amira, like progressive parents as well, who like,
oh, yeah,
certain things to be like, that's a good thing that's happening. And therapy was one of those things as an adult when I went, she was like totally open to and encouraging on. Do you, Kirby?
I'm in therapy. I have been for a while. And I think the thing that I love most about In Treatment, the few episodes that we've watched so far, is that it really makes silence a big character. Like, and I think my therapist has always been trying to make me okay and get comfortable with silence. And I feel that when I'm watching the episodes, like I'm able to see how big of a character saying nothing and the moments that you have between your clients mm-hmm. is just as important to the storyline as the conversations that you're having. Mm-hmm. And we know like this past year in particular has been really, you know, challenging for you because you've lost your mom.
So sorry, our condolences. Yeah,
seriously. Thank you. Very sorry Thank about you. That. And I'm wondering how this role for you is different than anything you've done before. And if it's forced you to pull from those personal moments in a way that you've never had to do with a character before.
It's funny. It's like when I was both, you know, Suzanne, Crazy Eyes Warren, and Shirley Chisholm were characters who, both of those roles were roles that I could draw experiences, like glimpses from my own life or experiences I have witnessed to help sort of shape and mold that character for myself. But like I had distance from those experiences, you know what I mean? Versus in treatment, the experiences that I obviously naturally would draw on, which are pain and loss, were things that were like bumping up against my real life. That was like the difference. I think like I had not had that experience, but there was still creation of, you know, this character and this woman. There still were like areas where our lives diverged from one another. But I also really did totally understand and know what it feels like to lose someone and be in pain over it. And I could understand what it meant to lose track of your pain, what it looks like to lose track of your pain.
Ooh.
Even if we experience it differently, I do know what it looks like to lose track of your pain.
How are you able to kind of draw those boundaries between work and life? Because in watching it too, Amir and I have both very differently experienced very close grief and loss in our lives. So a lot of times when I see shows like this, it brings me right back to that place and shows me the power and significance in therapy. Because I remember when I lost a really close friend of mine, mm-hmm. I went straight to my therapist. I went to my mom first. And I called my therapist. So wondering for you, as you're navigating this space, how are you able to set those boundaries for yourself?
Well, first, I'm sorry about the loss of your friend. And I hope both of you are healing. But drawing those boundaries, I think it's putting the legacy of my mom first.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. You know what I mean? And remembering what she wanted for not only mine, but my siblings, our lives, you know, and things, you know, that... You know, she had said, you know, like, to be sad, but not sad, sad. Be sad, but not sad, sad.
Like, yeah.
Just one sad, you know, yeah. Like things like that. Because she was like, don't be sad. It was funny, actually. She was like, don't be sad, you know. And then she was like, actually, be sad, but not sad, sad. Like, you know, she like interrupted herself. Like, actually, I do want you to cry, just not forever. You yeah. know, but so, you know, remembering that what my parents came here to do, my yes. mother instilled in us to be what she had as her own dreams for our lives, which was for us to be living our dreams. And so I had to remember that I was here living my dream and getting to live it with her even still, you know, like I had to remember like she's gone in a way, but it's like, but I'm her, she's always with me now. You know what I mean? And that's a powerful thing to also hold on to. And so I think it was like, that was one part. And I think then the boundary of the safe space, and of course it can get like trickier when you're dealing with things that have like such close proximity, but mm-hmm. remembering that this is something that I am here to be in service. I really do think of art as like a service industry. And even though I felt like I did get a lot back in doing this job, like it can't become about me or else it's about me and I'm not really doing what I'm here to be in service of. Do you know what I mean?
Right. No, I understand that.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the boundary where it's like, yeah, trying to remember like what you are here to do is to share and tell a service in hopes of sparking something in someone. And if it becomes too deeply uzo and your, then what are you, you could have done this in your room. You could have just, right. You know what I mean? Like, you could have done this at your house. You didn't need to do it on in front of cameras and put it out into the world.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. You spoke about when you mentioned grief and pain, kind of like getting lost and how you put it aside and deal with other things. Like, I was telling Kirby yesterday the type of therapy I went to when we lost my dad. Yeah. And look, my mom did the best she could. And honestly, like, this place is still very sacred to me. There's this place called Houston called Bo's Place. And I think the people in the hospital, my dad had cancer. So the hospital would like send kids there because it's a place where you go when you grieve with kids your own age. Like, I was in a group with kids who lost parents all different ways. And my little sister was in a group with kids all of her age that lost parents at the same time. But for me, because I'm a monster, at 12
years old.
A monster. I like that. That's my new bio.
Wait, it's not a negative into a positive. Okay.
I'm on star.
Because I'm a monster. I took my first therapy session. I was like, oh, wow, everyone loses their parents. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And I did not even dig deep there until I was 24. Like, I dealt with it. I felt it at that moment, but I was like, oh, this is normal. There are 10 kids from different subdivisions, different areas of Houston. I don't know them, but they all lost their parent around the same time. So I was like, oh, this is usual. Pain is usual. Mm-hmm. And I never, for 10, 15 years, I was just like, okay, everyone hurts. And then something happened at 24. I was like, oh, I should deal with this. Like, I should resurface this, go back to this and see what happened there, because I think I healed from it. But the way I saw pain in others wasn't fair to others and fair to my friendships. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was very like, you failing that test isn't that bad. That breakup isn't that bad. And I was one of those people, and that's so gross, but I wouldn't let people feel pain because I was like, there's always something worse happening.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we love therapy here. We talk about it quite often.
We do. We love Black women in therapy. I know.
But it's needed. I think it's good that you talk about it, though, because it's like, in our community, I think for a long time, it's like, I feel like there's a pivot that's like now starting to happen, but it feels like for a long, I don't know if you guys agree, but like, feels like for a long time that wasn't the norm, you know what I mean? Like, it was certainly not something discussed. It's like, don't try the therapist, try Jesus, you know what I mean? Like,
100%
kind of thing. Or like, you can talk to your family or your friends or your pastor, you know, like that as a resource. It wasn't portrayed, nor was it portrayed in entertainment or even like portrayed within the community, I think, like as a resource intended for us,
right? Yeah.
You know, it was like, people do go and do that. We just know.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and I think it's good that it's now being, it's like still on like the heels, like I think a little bit of being normalized, but I can feel that, like, you know what I mean? Like, I can feel that break point, like really hopefully happening, where it's not such a like dirty word or, you know, polarizing thing.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people that relate to being the clients in this show and to being in your position. I'm just proud that we got a Black woman portraying this, because
I know
that is my reality, okay? But also, I mean, speaking of stars and stores, we are at the virtual table with someone who is a multi Emmy Award winner.
Multi. Woo!
And you just locked a huge CBS deal, production deal, where you are now going to be the person giving the directions and producing all of these incredible content. So this is a different role for you. This is a different hat that you're wearing. So wondering, what is your approach kind of stepping into the producer role? And are there any things that you want to make sure you see on your sets to make everyone kind of feel comfortable?
Yes. I want to see inclusion. I want to see people. I want this to be a space that encourages, supports, give life to the unique stories that have laid absent in the space. I want to, you know, help create and develop stories that educate, inspire, and entertain. That feel authentic to the storyteller and to the audience. And I want nothing more than to serve as a bridge to the stories of the missing. You know, and when I say the missing, I don't like necessarily mean, I don't exclusively mean, excuse me, like just stories of figures over history that we haven't heard, though I do mean that.
Yeah.
But parts and faces and places we've not yet seen voices occupy is what I also mean. You know, that a story like a Brooke Taylor, you know, who's grown up in this Baldwin Hills region as a mental health professional, mm-hmm. like that person does exist because we know her, him, you know what I mean? And I want to see that story told equally as the other stories that I've seen told. So that's my dream and desire to see and find place for just for the place and space for the missing.
Yeah, I like that. That's beautiful.
I like that a lot. I am excited to see the table you build and the team you build because I love this era that we're in that like mm-hmm. everyone is building their own tables and like saying we're not going to let you put us in the corner anymore.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I got the head seat.
Also, I have one request. Can we please make sure that Anthony Ramos always has a seat at your table? That energy, the chemistry, yes. I also adore him, but you guys are great together.
Oh my gosh. He is life. Such a sweetheart. You know, he has a new project coming out, shout out In the Heights.
Oh yeah.
And I got to give love to my castmate, Dasha Polanco, who's also in that, my castmate there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He is phenomenal talent, was an incredible scene partner, artist to work with. Like, I was so happy to see him get to do a project such as this. That is so different from Hamilton, is so different from She's Gotta Have It, so different from In the Heights, you know, but it still has that same heart. He is a focused craftsman, you know, like he is, and he's a star. Also, he's a bright, incredible star and a gentle, beautiful human soul.
Stars brightening stars.
he's a star. So like he was amazing. And also I have to give love to all of them, you know, like everybody, they were all just amazing. But yes, Anthony was a pure, pure, pure delight and just a true artist.
Oh, I love that. So we know you have so much coming up, but can you tell the listeners, like, what's next? What else do you have?
What do we have to look out for? Put us on.
I wish I could put you on, but you can keep checking, refreshing, refreshing, because it's coming.
Okay.
You know what? What I want to do, continue to do, is I want to work with great people, mm-hmm. fun people, people who make me better, people who challenge me. I want to work with fun people and have fun experiences. I want to see the world.
Yeah.
And I want to do something we've never seen before.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Well, we'll be watching out for that. I mean, for now, and we didn't get to touch on Solos, but everybody needs to look out for In Treatment and for Solos on Amazon. I mean, that just clearly is just the next few things that you have coming up. But clearly there's a lot more that we should be refreshing that page.
Busy, busy, busy. Also, we like to end every podcast in some iteration of this. So if you could fill in the blank, my black is powerful because
it radiates and shines through the world.
Ooh. That was good. That was so fast. I wasn't ready. It gave me chills.
That's why.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you
so much for coming.
This literally was the light in my day. That was very
good. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Light in the week.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
A very dark, dim
good.
Week. Yeah.
Good.
You can come back anytime, please. Any way that we can help support you and bring your light out into the world even brighter. We're here for you. So come back anytime.
Thank you, guys. You guys, this is a perfect way to end the day for me, too. I was like, this is perfect. I love the melanin on the screen. I love all of it. I love it.
The Table's Ours is produced by us, Kirby Dixon and Amira Lawali. This episode was also produced by McKamey Lynn and Richard White and edited by Melissa Kaplan. Our researcher is Emma Fredericks. Our executive producers are Jesse Katz and Ted Butler. The Table's Ours was created by A&E. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. See you next week.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.